Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One. Live from Radio Row at MGM Grand in Las Vegas, this is the Adam Carolla Show with Adam Carolla and RJ Bell, plus the president of Showtime Sports, Steven Espinoza, and legendary boxing trainer, Freddie Roach. And now, he hates vegans, but he loves Vegas. Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get on, Mandy. Get it on. Thanks for tuning in to a special ACS. We're over here at the MGM Grand. We're at Radio Row. Broner versus Pacquiao. RJ Bell is here. RJ's going to interview me on every fight I've had.
Are we talking bar fights?
Bar fights, golden gloves, street fights, some domestic abuse, mostly coming from Lynette toward me, but I had to defend myself.
Exactly, right? It happens that way. That's what they say.
We'll talk to Freddie Roach, who will be in here. Who's Freddie Roach, I don't want to say quietly, but quietly one of the most interesting guys on the planet, if you really think about it. We're here on Radio Row. I'd rather be on Restaurant Row, but we're on Radio Row. We're next to a table with a guy who's doing a Spanish language podcast, and he's been screaming 1,000 miles an hour into his phone for the last 22 minutes. And it just struck me, as far as I can tell, the Hispanics are a sort of laid-back breed. You know what I mean? I mean, what other nationality has like a mascot of a guy taking a nap against a cactus? You know what I mean? That's laid-back. So that's laid-back. And there's a general sort of Corona-esque, chillax approach to life, which I appreciate. I like it. But then why are all the announcers screaming goal as loud as they possibly can and talking like they're fucking auctioning off cattle? And the only thing I can think of is they're trying to wake up everyone who's listening. Because it's a weird juxtaposition. Because, like, you take a look at, like, the Germans and you go, all right, that's a pretty consistent culture. Like, all right, they're pretty efficient. They build fast cars. They drive fast cars. They wear weird frames and weird shoes and their glasses. But what I'm saying is, it's like pretty straightforward. Pretty straight. The Mexican culture is pretty laid back, but their announcers are fucking high on speed and screaming into the mic as loud as they can, and that feels like a weird juxtaposition, RJ Bell.
But I think that's the point, is every day they're going through life, nothing's exciting, they're logy, siestas, mm-hmm. And then occasionally they get something more, and they gravitate towards it.
Okay,
go.
You said was hurtful.
What part? Hey,
you crossed the line. All right, this is uncomfortable.
I know you're very delicate.
I'm very delicate. And what you said, I have a lot of friends that are Hispanic. And what you said was hurtful. Anyway, I never thought about the juxtaposition between Mexican announcers and the Mexican community. All right. Now, Pacquiao is going up against Broner. Power, speed, clash of styles. Two boxing most explosive punchers go toe-to-toe in a welterweight title fight. Pacquiao is an underdog at this point, right?
Significant. So
significant
right now,
underdog.
Yeah, -300. Well, no, Pacquiao is the favorite. So Pacquiao is the favorite, -300.
-300, sorry.
And the dog is +250. So really it's bet $3 on Pac-Man to win a dollar.
Pacquiao is an eight-time division world champion.
I mean, only Ric Flair has more.
Only Ric Flair. That's more. Now you sound like my wife. Going against former four-time division world champion, must-see attraction, Adrian the Problem Broner. Pacquiao is in his fourth reign, 147 champ. Broner is looking to begin his second reign. And Broner's no chump, and this is going to be a good fight because Pacquiao is 40, Broner's 29. And if they're both 29, it'd be a pretty easy fight to call, but because Broner is much younger, it's going to be toe-to-toe action. Anyway, that'll be tomorrow night, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific time on pay-per-view. All right, so what I thought I'd do with RJ Bell is I thought, well, why not let RJ interview me? And since we both love fights, I figure I could tell him about some of my greatest fights. And people that are listening know a lot about some of the fights I've been in, but I thought I'll do some deeper cuts, and we can get into it. First, one of the fights I had was with a gym rat, with a guy who worked for... He was a student at Bodies in Motion, where I tried to teach, and I fought this guy.
So now how old were you at this point?
I was like 29. I was trying to get a job as a boxing coach at Bodies in Motion. I just kind of gotten a job as a boxing coach. I was, for some reason, and I can't remember why, but I was insanely light. I never weighed less than this amount. I was like 100. I weighed myself, I remember on like the gym scale, it was like 167 pounds or something, which is insanely light for me. I was 200 pounds in high school, played football, blah, blah, blah.
So but was this because you were in great shape? Like you were just cut and this was the pinnacle?
I was doing a lot of Molly at the time. But I don't know, but I'm just saying that's connected to the weight loss. I'm just saying as an aside.
High energy, high energy.
So I was working out a lot. I was boxing a lot. I had this great combination. I was working as a boxing coach, and I was super poor. So it was a great combination for fitness. Later on, I got rich and got into radio, and I went the exact opposite. Like, I went from sitting around while people, like Hooters, brought over food every night to being super poor, literally hungry, and working as a boxing coach. So I was going to spar this guy, and he was like a 155-pound guy. And I was like, what's the problem? And I remember the guy who owned the gym saying, oh, this guy's a freak. And I was like, what do you mean? He's like, he benches 375 or something. And he was like 155. And whoa. I was like, bring it on.
I'm on Molly. What's the difference?
Yeah. And also, I always had this expectation that when you spar with somebody that they're literally sparring, not fighting.
So headgear, right?
Yeah, I think we had headgear on, but some guys don't spar, they fight. And I never know who those guys, you never know in advance who those guys are. And I don't think they know in advance that they're those guys either. They just, the bell rings and they fight. That's so, what this guy was.
So did you ever have ambitions of professional boxing?
I had ambitions of amateur boxing, but I knew that it wasn't going to work. Like, I knew that, like, if you punch Roberto Duran, Roberto Duran gets angry and wants to kill you. And if you punch me, I get scared and go, man, that hurt. And I realize that's the mindset. The mindset a boxer has to have is way less than like 5% of the population or even 1% of the population, which you get hit and you go, now I'm going to kill you for punching me versus I never want you to hit me again.
You shouldn't have done that.
Yes. And I was, pardon the pun, in the corner of never wanting to be hit again.
So what attracted you to boxing then?
I wanted a contact sport after playing football. Also, it's like it's an attractive sport when you're playing football and you're trying to bulk yourself up and you're undersized and it's never going to work because of your size, it's super attractive. Like, what if they had football divisions where, like, I could have played a bunch of 175-pounders instead of try to bulk up and hang with the 275 guys, right? So I like the idea that there was a weight division for everybody. And I like the contact sport and the competition part of it. And I had, like, whatever natural abilities I had, they lent themselves to boxing. Like, I was coordinated and had good eyesight and pretty quick hands and things like that.
Did you find the discipline appealing? Like, because you've talked a lot about your family life, not a ton of guidance from the parents. Did it feel like this could give you direction, the boxing?
Yeah, I always knew that sort of imposing challenges on yourself would be a good thing, and the sort of solitude of it, where you just sort of skip rope for 20 minutes and no one else is timing you and no one else cares and you can quit whenever you want. It's up to you to do 20 minutes, you know, and then it's up to you to do five rounds of shadow boxing or five rounds of moving or five rounds of heavy bag or speed bag or double ended bag or whatever it is. Like, everything is really self-imposed, you know, and you'll kind of be the timekeeper and the gatekeeper. Nobody, you can quit whenever you want. No one ever say anything. I sort of like that part of it.
But there would be a consequence, right? A lot of life, you fall short. It's hard to objectively tell. But if you aren't ready in the boxing ring, right, you're going to get hurt.
Well, that's what happened with this miniature, this pocket Hercules at the Bodies in Motion in West Hollywood. I was probably on Pico over there by Fox in Los Angeles. And, like, I remember the guy who owned the place, he was like, this guy's super strong. And I'm like, ah, so what? And the other thing that was bad about this guy is he had one set of gloves. He didn't have bag gloves and sparring gloves. He just had gloves. And he would whack the heavy bag all day, every day with these goddamn gloves. And he probably had them for 8 years. And you shouldn't be sparring with gloves that you're using against a heavy bag because he'd worn it through. Like, he'd worn his knuckles. You could see his knuckles coming through the gloves because he'd just been working them the whole time. He'd been working the bag with these gloves all day. So then it's like, it came time to spar, and he's like, yeah, let me get my gloves. And he put his gloves on, and you could see it was all wrinkled. Like, it looked like an old person's face, you know, where his knuckles were. And it was all worn out and everything. And he's like, all right, let's spar. And every time he hit me, I could feel his knuckles coming through.
Wait a minute. I'm confused. You didn't like to get hit. The gym owner, who I'm guessing was a tough dude that wasn't like crying wolf, oh, this guy's tough, he tells you maybe you shouldn't do this. You said, no, bring it on. What was the thinking?
He told me this guy could bench like three times his body weight.
I know, so why
like
did you do it?
He had the strength of an ant, but a 155-pound ant, right? And I was like, yeah, but can he box? You know, I can box. I don't care how strong he is. Yeah, so he just beat the crap out of me, and I can remember feeling his knuckles like on my forehead the whole time. And I gotta tell you, when you get beaten up that way, you're not right for a couple of days. Like, you when you get a little bit concussed, so to speak, like I definitely clearly remember bell being rung for
how
for
many
days.
Times do you think you've been concussed from the box?
I would say, what's your name again? I would say I probably have about 4.5 from football and probably four or five from boxing. Oh, I would get knocked out in Pop Warner. I'm old school. Oh, wait. So Stephen Espinoza from Showtime is here. He's waiting around. I feel like we should just sit him in. RJ, you just hang in.
Yeah, if you start drifting because of your mental issues, I'll jump in.
Thank you. President of Showtime Sports, Stephen Espinoza. President of Showtime Sports, promoted in 2018. Executive Vice President, joined Showtime 2011. Good to see you. Good to meet you, Stephen Espinoza.
Thrilled. Thanks for joining us for Fight Week. Huh? It's a bit of a spectacle, to say the least, huh?
No kidding. Get as close as you can up into that mic. Congratulations, Showtime, for becoming the sort of world leader in boxing and keeping the mantle alive.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. We were surprised to see HBO get out of it, but at the same time, it's sort of the more things change, the more they stay the same, because you got Fox coming back in and ESPN coming back in, and you know, things, there's an ebb and flow to this, but there's a lot of activity around boxing right now, and you can't turn on an NFL game on Fox without seeing, you know, 38,000 promos for boxing. It's interesting.
Well, you know, the thing about boxing, as I think about it, is there's always been the boxing, all of life. I don't know why we think about it. I like collector cars. You take a look at American Muscle. Like, it was peaking out in the early 2000s, then it all dropped down, and now it's starting to come back up again. This notion that everything's just going to be the same all the time, that Holmes and Frazier and Ali and Norton and all those guys a little before Holmes. But what I'm saying is, like, you know, you had a sort of golden era of heavyweights. Then you had a golden era of middleweights with Hagler and Sugar Ray and all that kind of stuff. Then the heavyweights dried up. Of course, it's called life. There's not always going to be a super compelling heavyweight, middleweight champion that's going to capture the world's imagination and never an unbroken streak. Like when Muhammad Ali leaves, another guy like Muhammad Ali will just slide in and take his place. Like, are you kidding me?
Right.
You think Randall Tex Cobb is up to that challenge? Like, there's one Muhammad Ali. It's sort of stupid for us to expect that but we wait a while and then Mike Tyson shows up and now the heavyweights are quite an interesting group as we speak.
You know, it's, you know, not to get too sort of societal and sociological about it, but, you know, everyone asks, where did the heavyweights go? And I'll tell you, they went to the NBA and the NFL.
Right.
Because if Muhammad Ali were to come on the scene today, he would be a running back, a linebacker. You know, he would be, you know, the money in the NFL is so much greater today than it was when Ali was active. And put it another way, Michael Strahan, you know, if there was no NFL or NFL was, you know, paying what they were paying back in the 70s, Michael Strahan would probably be the heavyweight champion of the world.
I'm the guy who took out his middle tooth when we were sparring back in the late 80s. He used to have a tooth there. A lot of people they think it's just the two that have separated. Oh, he had a thin one in there. I got it home in a Lucite case. He won't talk about it.
Of course not.
He won't talk about it. He'll call you a liar.
It's like kryptonite, right? And you bring it out and he gets all weak.
He don't want any part of me. You know why? No way he's not here? Because I'm here. I go to New York, he leaves, man.
He wants to keep the teeth he has left.
You got to Google that shit, man. Hand of God. Yeah, you're right. And it's interesting. Yeah, you see a lot of, well, you see Gates. I mean, you see a lot of guys that could have even went to the NBA, move on over to the NFL and hammer a check. So it's a very interesting, and it's sort of a, it adds a wrinkle because it's like I always talk about the sort of economics of boxing. You know, I tell people, they laugh. I go, you know, Jews used to do a ton of boxing. You know what I mean? They go, yes. Oh, get the hell out of here. I go, no, they were here. They were poor. They fought. They lived in poverty. They did what people do. They fight to get off the streets. And then, you know, they got it together and they became doctors and lawyers. And now they run Hollywood. But anyway.
well, that's actually the fascinating part of that, because if you look at it again sociologically, whoever's sort of at the bottom of the food chain, whether it's, you know, Jewish fighters or Italian. Or Hispanics in the 80s.
A lot of Irish guys, a lot of Italian guys.
And most recently, with the fall of the Berlin Wall and opening up in Eastern Europe, you've got all these Eastern European fighters. That's where
right.
Klitschko's come. So it is, you know, people don't go into boxing because they have a lot of other options.
Sure.
So it tends to be, you know, who's ever most desperate at that particular time ends up ruling boxing in a
By
sense.
The way, every one of these same rules applies to porn. If you want to follow the trajectory of porn, like, hey, where are those hot blonde chicks? I'm like, they're Soviet blonde. Oh, okay. Yeah, we used to get them from Florida, but not anymore.
Nebraska. Not.
Right.
So before we get to Broner and Pacquiao, the heavyweights, where are we at? I mean, it's I'm officially intrigued. We have guys who really should be called super heavyweights.
Right.
If this was the Olympics, they would be super heavyweights. I think the Olympics stops at 205 or something like that. They do have a super heavyweight division, but these guys, it's unheard of. They're 6'8", they're 270 pounds. Had a pretty DeAndre Wilder fought to a draw, I think. It was a crazy fight. Fury, where are we at?
Well, I think we have a more exciting and interesting heavyweight division that we have probably since any time since Mike Tyson was active, you know, and that's really what happened to Mike Tyson, you know, a whole range of things. That's a whole podcast by itself. But one of the things is he got sized out of the division.
Right.
You know, those last couple fights were against these super heavyweights, and they weren't that good, but they were good enough to beat him.
But do you think Tyson in his prime would have had trouble against those guys?
It's a good question because he was always smaller than those other guys. I think once you started getting the 6'7", 250 pounds, then a guy like Mike, he was never going to continue in that with that kind of competition.
Tyson did things as a boxing fan. You have to be a fan of Mike Tyson, and I'm not talking about in the ring. I'm talking about outside of the ring only. Oh no! Wait a minute. Just in the ring. Sorry, I flipped that one. I've been concussed a few times.
Well, the hangover was pretty good.
No, the hangover. I love fights outside Dapper Dan's at 3 in the morning. They're great.
Yeah, I know. With what's his name, Jerry Curl Jones.
Right.
I love that guy, Mitch Blood Green.
That's right.
I never fight a guy whose middle name is Blood.
Blood.
Not in the street. By the way, could there ever been a, like, in terms of names, was there ever less of a Mitch?
Right, Mitch.
You see a picture. Everyone look up Mitch Blood Green and tell me if you know anyone named Mitch who looks like that. Because you hear a guy named Mitch, you're like, oh, I'll fight him. His middle name's Blood. I'm going to stay in the bar. So Tyson, as a fan, not of Tyson, but of a fan of boxing. When you watched him in his prime, when he did that move, we're from an orthodox stance, right hand behind him. When he threw the vicious hook to the body and came right back with the same right hook, uppercut, the leverage, when you saw him dig down, and I don't mean throw it wide, I mean dig, lower his whole body, and when he rose, it wasn't his fist that was rising, his whole body was rising. Yep. When he threw those kind of punches, you'd never seen that in the heavyweight division. That was a Sugar Ray Leonard, Marvin Hagler kind of a thing. You didn't see his technique in the heavyweight division because George Foreman didn't need that to knock people out, and other guys did other things, but you never saw that kind of technique, and it was insane. I mean, even Ali, as great as he was, never had that kind of leverage on his punches.
Right.
Never with that kind of technique and body torque and all that. So he was a phenom, and he couldn't have done that in a 6'4 frame.
Right.
It was that style came from him being compact.
Right.
But now they're super heavyweights, and that's who's fighting.
And I think the evolution of this is they've turned into the super athlete as well. Because now we used to have this class of super heavyweights that weren't, you know, they're good athletes and elite athletes. They weren't like superstars in terms of movement. Like you never looked at Lennox Lewis or the Klitschko's and say, wait, that guy is a supreme athlete the way an NBA player is.
Right.
But if you look at Deontay Wilder at 6'7", you know, 220, 230, or Tyson Fury, you know, at 6'9" and 260. Those guys move in a way that few athletes outside the NBA move. You don't see guys at 6'7" that light on their feet.
Yeah, it's an evolution, and it used to be sort of like high school, which is there always was the one big dude, and they put him at nose tackle, and he couldn't get out of his own way, but he took up a lot of space, and you never found fleet of foot and that kind of actual just size, and now you're seeing it. Fights coming up, and the fight, I think people like competition. I think people like combat sports. I think people like the MMA. The MMA is attractive because you don't need to know the names of the people that are in the cage. There can just be some great fights amongst a couple of no names, which you see in boxing, but in boxing, you need to build a relationship with the fighter before going into the fight for some reason. I'm not sure. It's a little less necessary in MMA. I can see two strangers try to kill each other, and it's kind of like watching bums fight. I like it. I don't need to know the bums.
And I think it has to do with the length of the fights and the commitment that it takes. Because you can sort of say, oh, it's a three-round fight. I watch three guys. I have no idea who they are. Fight for three rounds. You're going to sit down and, you know, might be a 10-round fight or 12-round fight, you're going to need to care. You're going to need to be emotionally invested to spend that time.
Speaking of MMA, I think Conor McGregor was threatening you. Somebody showed me on YouTube, like he was standing there screaming at you. I'm not sure why he was doing that.
It escapes me as well. It was a...
There's a YouTube clip at a press conference inside a boxing ring That was probably your first mistake. You probably shouldn't have been in the ring.
In the box. Well, you know, the funny thing, and that was the press tour for Mayweather-McGregor, and we did
Did you put together Mayweather-McGregor?
I did. I was, you know, obviously a lot of people did, but, you know, I was one of the key figures. And we went to L.A., then Toronto, then Brooklyn, and then London. L.A. went smoothly. Everyone's friendly. Everyone's excited. By the time something happened between L.A. and Toronto, because Toronto was when all of a sudden, you know, it seemed like he was fighting me as opposed to Mayweather.
How much of McGregor, in your estimation, it may be unknowable, but you were closest to him when he was shooting spittle at you, screaming, get up, I'll punch you. How much of it is hype for the fight, and how much of it is, you know, theater, and how much of it is legitimate?
My personal theory, and I wish I remembered the term. There's a term in wrestling for when someone sort of crosses the line and becomes their character.
Oh, interesting.
And so it's sort of like being undercover. You know, you're in deep cover for 6 months. All of a sudden, you start believing you're actually a drug dealer. My theory is...
That's interesting, yeah.
He's become that character, and there isn't a line separating anymore. I don't think he knows who he is outside that character.
It's kind of like what Snoop Dogg is with pot.
Right.
Not sure who he is anymore. It's all pot all the time.
All the time. It works.
It works. Yep. So he sort of becomes that, and now it's really a sort of a weird psychological experiment to figure out when he became that, when he is that, when he's not that. Does he know he's that? But he knows... He gets a lot of attention. He gets a lot of big checks. And why stop?
Why stop? And, you know, I look at that incident in Brooklyn. You know, he threw the dolly at the bus and all that. Let's just say that the three of us here could imagine a universe in which we could do that. We'd be that mad to do that. Like, somebody said something about your mother, whatever it is.
I don't like my mom, so say what you want about the bitch. But... I get it. Somebody said something about your mom, and I do like her, and so I grab a hand truck. I get it.
But let's say you're sitting home in Ireland, you know, and you find out, like, someone... So you jump on a plane, fly to New York City. You're still fired up enough.
Did he do that? I didn't know.
Yes.
I thought he was just working the garage or something.
Right,
I didn't
know.
I thought he was... I didn't know he literally flew out Ireland.
Yes.
Yeah, forget count to 10. This is
right. This is like, you've got his 5-6 hour flight to cool off. Like, isn't there a guy on the plane who's supposed to be like, come on, Connor, let's.
My greatest,
it's not too late.
I've had some of my greatest timeouts in first class.
Right. You're right.
Oh, yeah, I will make it a double. Why not? Sure. Oh, well, I'll have the brisket and the chicken, if that's
right.
Okay. Why
can't I
have... I'll have both.
Right.
I'll have both. Yeah, it is pretty crazy to stay beaked up on that kind of... That length of flight.
I mean, you're going through TSA. Well, you know, he's flying private, but you're going through TSA. You're loading... Like, you're still fired up the whole flight until you land.
So, are you thinking he's going to punch me at a certain point?
No, I didn't think he was going to punch me, because I thought at the end of this, this is a big paycheck and a big event. He's not going to risk that. But he, at every stop, he went head to head, very personal. And it continued beyond the scenes. It wasn't something that he put on for the camera.
The answer is, it is him.
I, as far as I know, and I'm not going to claim to know him well, but, you know, that's my sense. That's my sense. It is him.
But think about it. He's made how many more millions of dollars has he made because of his personality?
Oh, great. Adrian Broner. Sorry, here.
I'm with my best friend.
Thank
Let's
you
go.
For joining us. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not Conor McGregor's best friend. Your best friend.
Right.
Yeah.
Adrian Broner fighting on Saturday night against Pacquiao, as we know. Couple of things. So, Adrian, I don't have your official particulars in front of me, but you've won a lot of fights.
He's not a fan of me, I see.
No, I am. I've defended you many times. 40-13, is it? No, that was Freddie Roach's.
Sorry.
You don't have 13 losses.
No. All right.
Adrian, you're an underdog in the fight. So says RJ Bell.
That's correct.
Should I bet on you?
Of course.
We'll get your mic heated up. Why are you going to beat Manny Pacquiao?
I just feel like it's my time. You know, it's a lot of things you could conquer. It's a lot of things you can beat. You just can't beat time. And I just feel like it's my time.
Well, certainly historically, older guys have been able to hang out in the heavyweight division for a while, but it's tough to hang around in the middleweight and welterweight divisions when you're starting to hit 40.
I'm not really here to talk about heavyweights. I'm a welterweight, and you know, hopefully I don't become a heavyweight later on in my career.
No, I'm saying in boxing, there's old heavyweights. Yeah, there aren't old middleweights.
I understand everything you're saying. But this is definitely a historical moment, and Saturday night history will be made.
So you feel confident you're going to win?
I'm very confident.
What do you walk around? I was reading a thing about Freddie Roach, and Freddie Roach was talking shit about you, and he was saying that it's too much weight to cut for you, and psychologically you're not going to be up to the challenge.
I don't know. You know, I don't know what Freddie Roach got going on. You know, I just hope he can hold it together and, you know.
He's what weight do you walk around at?
The weight that I'm comfortable at, you know. Just like the weight that you walk around at is the weight that hopefully you're comfortable at.
Now, during football season, I always get fat.
Huh?
Football season makes me fat because every Sunday I sit around with Cousin Sal and I drink IPAs and eat hoagies and I get fat.
Well,
at least you're
comfortable with that. As long as you're comfortable with that, you know, being fat during football season, that's your thing.
But do you have to cut weight for a fight like this?
Every boxer going to a fight and they got to cut weight. And, you know, of course I had to cut weight and I did it with ease. And I feel great and I'm in great shape. And Saturday night, everybody will see that.
Well, you know, the one element, he really didn't have a choice. I mean, Adrian obviously is disciplined and businesslike. But in Kevin Cunningham, you have a guy who was a police officer in Ferguson, Missouri. That was his day job.
Mm-hmm.
Until when he moved to West Palm Beach, only a couple of years ago. So you want to talk about a no-nonsense guy? You know, that's not a guy who cuts corners. You know, you're a police officer, East St. Louis, Ferguson, Missouri. Like, that is, you know, no-nonsense. So there's not a lot of playing around. There's not a lot of game playing in that training camp.
Was your... what do you do? Well, hypothetically, you don't need to do it too much, let's just say. But what is the cut weight? Like, what is the procedure? What would a day be like?
Eat shit, sleep, and boxing. That's it. You know, work out, wake up, work out, eat breakfast. I got a chef to stay with me and cook my breakfast, sleep.
I'm curious. I ask everyone, what's breakfast, lunch, and dinner?
Well, it varies because, you know, the chef, he knows when it's time to cut weight, and then you got to start cutting down on the plates and making the plates a little smaller and the right amount of food for you to have enough energy to perform. And so, you know, it varies.
Well, here's the I think the challenging thing for me. I've never been in his shoes, but right here, you know, he's probably hungry. You know, there's some starvation going on, but this is when guys like me are leaning on him and say, look, you have to sit down with Anna Carolla. You got to go down, do all these interviews. So at the exact point in the fight week when you don't want to talk to anybody and you're ready to rip everybody's head off, they're pushing you in front of cameras and microphones.
Why don't you scream at him like Conor McGregor did?
I think
he likes that.
Stephen,
can I just say this about the food real quick? I got here, there was food, but they started dragging the tables
slowly,
away.
Slowly, yep, you got to be quick.
You can't take food away from sports reporters. That's all they got is free food. People were jumping, like literally trying to tackle the guy.
It's my favorite part of the week. It's my favorite part of the week is seeing the media guys fight over food.
All right, so Adrian, any predictions for the fight tomorrow?
I'll be victorious.
Or Saturday. I'll be victorious.
Yes.
All right.
I don't care if it's a knockout or a split decision or unanimous decision. I will be victorious.
Thank you. Adrian Broner, everybody. A little bit of a dog on the fight, but RJ Bell says bet on Adrian and make your money. Times 2.5?
Yeah, right now 100 wins you 250 on Adrian. So,
you ever bet on yourself, Adrian?
Nah, I don't play them type of games.
All right.
Are you really RJ? Or are you saying that because he's here?
Or no, you know, to me, I think that you always want to bet against the public, right?
Right.
And the public's going to look at Pacquiao. And like you said, Pacquiao's 40. But they're going to remember Pacquiao in his prime. So to me, whenever you got an older fighter with a big name, the value's probably the other way.
Makes sense. There you
go. I will say that. I'll be rooting for you, even though I like Pacquiao, because one time I made fun of Filipinos. And one thing I've learned is you can't make fun of Filipinos. John Stewart told me that. Many other comedians have told me you can never make fun of Filipinos. He told me that after I made fun of Filipinos. Yeah, yeah, they should tell you before you make fun of Filipinos. And so the entire island, it is an island, right? They wanted to kill me.
Yes.
And
yes.
He called them off.
Oh, he can.
He literally just said, hey, nation, don't kill that podcaster.
That's right.
So
absolutely.
I do kind of owe him for that.
You do owe him your life. Yeah.
That's all.
But, you know, Adrian can do that for the hood, though.
Yeah.
You know. Oh, no, I'm down with the hoods. Yeah. Oh, your people love me.
Yeah.
Oh, they worship me.
Well, if you get
they
in
idolize
trouble,
me.
You drop AB's name, you know, and that'll get you a lot of source.
I took a tour of Snoop Dogg's house. Are you kidding me? I'm like officially black over here. It's on YouTube. All right, thanks, Adrian. I'll bid you adieu before Freddie Roach comes around. I know there all could right. be a little bad blood. Thank you for coming by.
Good luck.
All right, so RJ Bell is here. Steven Espinosa, ESPN, is here as well. RJ, I'll give you a plug in a second. What do we got to look forward to? What are you guys trying to make happen? And what about... So I was thinking about sort of the genius of Floyd Money Mayweather, which is he's 40, I guess. He's probably not in the, you know... In the shape, I don't mean physical shape. I just mean probably not good to go against the elite of his weight division, but still doesn't mean he can't hammer millions and millions of dollars worth of checks doing sort of, I don't want to call them novelty fights, but like sort of public interest fights because of his name. Is there, he has to be thinking, look, instead of going against, Canelo Alvarez, or instead of getting my head bashed in, whatever, I can fight a couple guys in Japan and get, you know, $20 million.
Well, plus that 50-0 is huge for his legacy and his mind. So I don't think he risks that in any case, really.
But does he have another Conor fight? Does he fight Godzilla? Does he?
Well, I mean, I think he would like a do over on Mayweather Pacquiao, not because obviously he came out on the winning end, but I don't think he was satisfied with the entertainment value that it provided.
So you think Pacquiao Mayweather may fight again?
If Adrian is not as successful as he hopes to be, and Pacquiao looks good, you know.
Well, Adrian did make a bold prediction by saying he would beat him some way.
Yeah.
I was looking for a round.
It didn't matter.
Freddie Roach is just joined us. Steven, we'll bid you adieu.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much for putting
good
this
hands
whole thing
with Freddie
on.
He knows way more about boxing than I do.
Oh, yeah. He's the best. All right. Let me take care of a quick piece of business here while Freddie gets situated over here. Let me tell you quickly about Craftsman. New home for Craftsman. That's Lowe's, everyone, including their new V20 cordless power tool lineup. One battery system works in multiple products, 2, 4, 6, and 8 tool combo kits. Available with 2-amp high-capacity lithium batteries that work with all the tools in their V20 lineup. Runtime you need, the power you deserve. V20 brushless tools available. They have the Max brushless drill, the V20 Max impact driver, the V20 Max hammer drill if you're doing masonry work. But get that impact driver, man. Love an impact driver. Proudly made in the USA with global materials from Charlotte, North Carolina. For the latest in Craftsman products and updates, visit Lowe's.com/Adam. That's Lowe's.com/Adam. Lowe's is the new home for Craftsman, everybody. Freddie Roach, I'm a big fan. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
We'll pull that mic up to you as close as we can get. You speak right into it. Freddie Roach, legendary trainer, and a really just an interesting American, I would say. I don't think Everyone knows that Freddie had a pretty illustrious pro career. I don't know what the... Oh, there we are. Sorry. 40-13 as a pro fighter. Got out. You didn't... Did you leave boxing with anything in your pocket?
No. I was broke. And I had a job at a telemarketing company. I was a telephone salesman.
What was your biggest payday as a boxer?
$7,500.
And what was your record at the time?
27-2. I was fighting, I think, Camacho.
Hector Camacho?
Yeah, he was making him a lot more than I did.
People forget about Hector Macho Camacho, but he was
another name.
He was one of the first, well, not one of the first, but one of the big time characters in boxing. He was one of these guys. He sort of, his trunks weren't really trunks; they were vertical blinds. Like had flaps, like
very true.
weird cloth flaps that just sort of hung down. It was like a little bit of a tunic or something. It was a somewhat homoerotic to a young Adam Carolla, but I was able to focus on his technique. He had the hair slicked back, and he was sort of Rico Suave. Did you lose that fight?
Yeah, I lost the decision to him, and we fought up in Sacramento, and then I fought Bobby Chacon. I had him down twice in the fight, but then I lost that one also. And then I think I called it. I think maybe I had one or two more fights, and then I retired.
Bobby Chacon was another name, although I don't think he had a nickname, did he?
Bobby Schoolboy Chacon.
Schoolboy.
Yeah.
So you grew up where? I'm interested in your story.
I'm from Dedham, Massachusetts.
And how did you find your way into boxing?
My dad was a fighter. My dad won the New England title in 1947, I believe. And then I followed his footsteps a little bit. I won the same title in 1979. And then there was really no really pro game in boxing. A good place for amateur boxing. I had 150 amateur fights. So it was quite active, a lot of activity going on in Boston in the amateur level. But as a pro, I fought four fighters and I won a New England title. And I decided to move out to Las Vegas. And then me and my dad came out and we found Eddie Fudge, my new trainer.
Legendary trainer.
The guy we wanted. And he was my trainer for about 10 years. And then I worked as Eddie's assistant for 5 years. And that's when I was a telemarketer. And my telemarketing name was Joe Davis.
Did you... I'm fascinated by... You know, I think about it as I think about myself, which I'm apt to do, you know, because I am me.
Wait, what, you?
I was doing comedy for a million years, but I didn't know what to do in comedy. Comedy's like saying sports. It's like, what's sport? I do sports, you know what I mean? But what is your sport, you know? And it's like, I would do stand-up, but I didn't feel it. Like, I was like, yeah. I'm okay. I can do it. Like a good athlete could play different sports, but Jordan wouldn't be a great baseball player, but he could be a decent baseball player. Yeah, but yeah. I didn't find my sport. And then at a certain point, I met Jimmy Kimmel, and I got into radio, and I was like, now I've found my sport. And for you, such a great trainer, such a legendary trainer. Do you feel like, in a way, that even though you're boxing, your sport was trainer?
Yeah, the thing is, I found something that I'm much better at, that's for sure. I was okay fighter, and but then, I was talking to Stallone, and he says, "You're lucky you weren't that great a fighter." I said, "Why?" He says, "Because great fighters don't become great trainers." He says, "You need to be like in the middle of the road a little bit because you understand the game better than most, and you don't expect too much out of everybody, you know." Because he says he's a bad teacher because he expects everyone to be easy for everybody.
Comes too easy.
Yeah, and the thing is, it doesn't. You know? So being Eddie's assistant for 5 years was very, very vital to my career because I learned the trade of a trainer now and what trainers do, and I was much better at that than fighting. So I really did find my niche there.
Also, do you feel like with some of your boxers, and maybe you personally, which is, if you have a ton of natural gifts, you sort of get by on them a little bit. If you don't have a ton of natural gifts, you must employ tons of technique. Yes. You have to have technique, you have to have discipline and technique, and you can never stop with discipline and technique because you can't fall back on natural gifted ability.
Yes, that's very, very true. And that's what I did. I mean, the thing is, that first year off, I, you know, maybe drank a little bit too much and just didn't know really where I wanted to go. And I was very frustrated that I didn't win a world title, and I tried really hard to do that. But then after a year off, I said, I better get back to work. And I started training. And then Virgil Hill, my first world champion, he asked me if I could help Eddie out because Eddie was just so busy with all the fighters. And so Virgil became my first champion. And then things started to kick off from there, that point on.
Virgil over the hill is one of the greatest nicknames. Virgil Hill was a real good light heavyweight who was a light heavyweight champ for a while.
Yes.
Fought a few guys. God, I don't know. Did he lose to Roy Jones?
Yes, he lost to Roy Jones. He broke his rib.
But he was a good. He was a good. Real good light heavyweight, and did he move up to heavyweight at all?
He went to cruiserweight.
Cruiserweight
one time, and he was really popular in North Dakota, and he drew big crowds up there. And fighting in North Dakota was like a fun place, but actually a very cold place to go though, because it was last time I was there, it was 60 below zero. So it's cold. It's very cold there.
Wow, imagine doing road work with Virgil Hill, 60 yeah. below zero. So. I was asking somebody about this. I never got an answer on the way in. Are you a single man? I've seen profiles on you. I've seen exposés and little mini docs and stuff. I find it very interesting, your life. But I've never seen kids or wives or any of that.
No, just my kids are pretty much in the gym. I have 17 pro fighters right now, and I'm there from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. every day, and we're just working and getting those guys ready for fights. I got 3 title fights next month, so it's going to be a busy February.
Is your dad around, or did he stay around long enough to see you have success in your second career?
No, he didn't stay around long enough, and I wish that he had, but no, it didn't work out that way. But my mother was with me for quite a bit, and she wanted to be close to me, so I built a duplex, and she lived on one side, I lived on the other. It was really great. But she passed away last year. But then I took really good care of her, and she had a very good life.
What other fighters did you train up in along the way, like a Virgil Hill?
You know, Virgil Hill, James Toney, Stevie Collins.
James lights out Toney, man. That dude.
Talented guy.
he was. I couldn't imagine trying to train James Toney. I saw James Toney fight at the Olympic Auditorium when they reopened the Olympic Auditorium. I think De La Hoya fought on that card.
I was there.
You were in Tony's corner. Tony fought at middleweight.
Yes.
Moved his way up to heavyweight. Didn't get any taller.
No.
So you can probably do the math on that. Yeah. Tony was a guy, and you tell me. Well, I'll make this observation. You tell me what you think. Tony was a gifted physical guy, and he was slick. And he knew... Slick guys can do things that don't involve that much movement, and you can avoid being hit. Slick guys use their shoulders to block punches. So you don't have to have your hands up. You don't have to be up on your bike running around and all that stuff. So he could stand in front of you, smoke a cigar, eat a sandwich, and kind of be slick, like roll the shoulders, take the punches off the shoulders. And so what happens is when that guy starts putting up on weight, he just goes, I'm just going to go fight in a higher weight division, because he's slick.
Yeah, he's slick, and he did climb to heavyweight title, and he did win a heavyweight title at one time against, I think, John Ruiz.
You trained him at, 155, 160. What was the lightest he fought?
60 was the lightest.
160.
And 68 and 75.
And what was the heaviest he fought?
210. Yeah.
That's a 50-pound difference there.
If James had maybe a little discipline in his life, he probably could have been maybe one of the greatest fighters of all time. He was really slick. He was a slick guy.
But to our point...
I remember when he knocked out Evander Holyfield. I mean, like James Toney wasn't supposed to really do that.
James lights out Toney. He's a great character, amazingly gifted, amazingly slick. Could have been one of the best of all time. Yeah. but once again had all this ability. So why, you know, training sucks. You know, yeah. if you can win and avoid training as hard as some guys train, getting up at 5 a.m. and doing road work and stuff, and you can still win, then you can do it. Yeah, that's what he did, but you won't be the best of all time.
Of course, yes.
Who is the most gifted guy? And then, you know, a guy like Pacquiao has a crazy work ethic.
Yes.
Where is he on the talent scale?
Talent, he's pretty high up there. He does have talent, but he's not really a slick fighter. Right? What was a, you know, you will never see him roll the shoulder and stuff like that. But his offense is his defense. His speed and his punching power is really great for a small person.
So let's say James Toney, let's just give him a 10 in ability, mm-hmm. and a 3.5 in work ethic.
Yes.
Let's give Manny Pacquiao a 10 in work ethic and a what in ability?
I would say about a 5. You know, the thing is,
Then you combine the two scores, and he has a 15, and James Toney has a 13.5, and that's why the 15.
Yes.
Wins.
And that's how trainers become a trainer of the year, because you get guys like that. So 4 times I had Manny Pacquiao, 3 times I had James Toney.
Right. Who is the most talented or the most skilled fighter you have ever either worked with or seen, or even seen film of from back in the day?
Michael Moore was a really, really good light heavyweight. Yep. Then he moved to heavyweight. He was a really slick, good fighter, well-rounded, knew the game very, very well. I always thought he would go into training someday because he was such... He had so much information, and he was really good to be... But his work ethic...
You know what's weird? For me, it's Joe Hip. Anyway, I just say those things so people can take a deep dive on the internet and go look up Joe Hip, and then you'll retroactively laugh at my joke. he was sort of fat, and he's the only guy who fought with a knee brace on like his entire career. I guess he needed it.
Yes,
I don't know if we'll make fun of the man, but you'll take... All right, deep dive. All right, so when I was watching... I found it interesting when George Foreman came back, and when Michael Moore was fighting him, it was almost like, and you tell me, I have a theory in life, and I think almost everything in life will apply sort of directly to the ring, because the ring will just sort of bring out everything in you, everything in a man, everything in a woman, like all the fears, whatever type you are. It gets magnified in the ring, right? If you're lazy, you'll see it. If you're aggressive, you'll see it. Whatever. If you're fearful, you'll see it. Like all that you are doesn't really happen like when you're in a jacuzzi, unless you're horny. That's me. Horny in the ring, not good. I've learned many times. I've been admonished by many a corner man. But no, it brings it out. And Michael Moore looked like he wanted out. Like it almost looked like he almost let Foreman knock him out. Like he was ahead. He was standing way too close to him. I don't know why he was doing what he was doing. And he just hit him and he was like, good. I get to leave.
And his dream came true. He won the heavyweight title back from a legit fighter also. And
Holyfield.
Yeah. And, Michael Moore, when Foreman says, he set him up for that, and he says, you just got fucking lucky.
But do you think there are guys like Buster Douglas, maybe like a little bit like Michael Moore, but like Buster Douglas, who went, I don't want to deal with this. I won the heavyweight strap. I don't want to have a life of dieting and press conferences. I don't want it. And I may say, like what I'm saying is when a guy... When I used to do Loveline and someone would say, oh, my girl found out I was cheating, you know, and what happened? Oh, I left my phone out and had a whole bunch of sex messages from my girlfriend. I left it on the dining room table. It's like, you wanted her. You wanted out. You wanted out of this. You wanted her to find. You don't know it.
No, but
you won't admit it. But you wanted, we're better off divorced now or whatever. It's like, yeah, you wanted that. You just wouldn't have the guts to go tell her that or say it out loud. Do you ever deal with fighters? You feel like again, like Buster Douglas, like they does, almost want it out.
It does happen, and like you know, Michael Moore won the lightweight title with 17 wins, 17 knockouts, was perfect, and so forth. But then when he moved up and making weight and stuff became difficult, he just didn't like the sport anymore. He just was angry with the sport. So, like you said, it was a perfect time for him just to get out.
Yeah, it's weird. But you could almost, if you guys ever watch that fight, he's standing next to a guy who can't really move. He's standing next to a guy who he's beaten the whole fight. And he's standing next to a guy whose only real chance is to land a big, slow right hand. And he stayed right in his range. And it's like, your former light heavyweight guy, move around, win the fight, go home with the strap. And he hit him, and when he hit him, he went down, and it just looked like, okay, I'm glad. Like, I don't have to get back up again. How's the Parkinson's, Freddie? You look good.
Not really. Everything's gone away. It says, I went to my doctor the other day, and I says, he says, you're doing quite well. I said, yeah, I feel great. And he says, what's the change? I says, well, I don't shake anymore. And he says, how come? I says, well, that's why I came to you. I said, you're supposed to know that. You're the neurologist. So, but he says, well, let's be happy with it at this point. And everything's going really well. And you know, I work mitts every day, hand-eye coordination stuff. And just it really helps me a lot.
You believe... I don't mean that in a condescending way, but I'm not a neurologist. I don't know what your doctor thinks about your constant hand-eye coordination, holding the punch. I used to hold the focus pads myself, and you know, I've had to have hand surgery. My stupid knuckles are all fucked up, and my hands are a mess now. So I'm barely this close to hiring a guy to beat me off. This close. It's not gay.
It would be a guy, though. It would be a guy.
I'm not a weirdo. I'm married. Jesus Christ.
But it's you not know, cheating.
If your hand's fucked up, it's not fucking cheating. It's like the handicapped parking space at the fucking Gelson's. You're not an asshole if you park up front if you have a legitimate reason.
No comment.
Wow, it's like I'm being attacked over here. But what I'm saying is my hands are all fucked up, so I can't hold these stupid things anymore. But does your doctor... neurologist, does he say all this activity is constantly sort of keeping you connected?
Pretty much the hand-eye coordination and just drills like that and just working every day, not being lazy and just living a good, clean life.
I got to say, I was saying to my guys when they said Freddie Roach going to come in and talk to you, I said, how's he doing? Like, is he in good shape? Can he conduct an interview? Because a few years ago, I think you were more symptomatic than you are now. And so I was doing a math where, you know, he was shaking a bit a few years ago. What's he like now? And he is night and day, which you don't normally see when people have a disease. It normally gets progressively worse. So is there a medication thing or a treatment that I'm unaware of?
I do take medication 4 times a day, and he... It's funny how the doctor, like I said, well, you know what, can I change that one a little bit? And he says, well, you're doing really well. I said, yeah, but that one I don't like, makes me a little bit tired. And he said, well, why don't we just say we're out right now because you're doing so well. I says, okay, he won the argument. So,
you know what I love about Freddie Roach other than, again, just a very interesting American story transcends boxing. I think you and... Teddy Atlas must be the two most honest people on the planet. I've never heard unbridled honesty come out of two. They happen to both be in the same sport, but and I don't know if you're friends with Teddy Atlas, but I've never heard either one of you dodge a question or say anything but exactly what was on your mind. Not speaks his mind to be a dick, just speaks his mind to answer the question.
Yeah, pretty much. Teddy and I, when he quit Michael Moore and I took Michael Moore over, he was a little mad at me. But when my mother passed away, he gave me like the nicest phone call of all time. It was very, 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 it was very kind of him to do that, and it was unexpected. And so I can't say anything bad about Teddy.
You guys hadn't really talked for a long time.
Never. Yeah. We wouldn't even go in the same room together.
Wow.
Yeah, one time.
Because he felt like he stole his fighter?
Yes.
guess there's a certain amount of that in life. I remember when I took Panama Lewis's guy back in the day. Panama was pretty pissed for a while, but we've mended. I don't know if you talked to Panama in a while. He's probably dead. Is he dead?
No, he's still around.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying. I haven't spoken to him in a while. But if you speak to Panama, you tell him Adam said hi, okay?
I will.
And then kind of tell me what your feeling is on it. Panama is a crazy famous fighter, and he trained, God, the guy who fought Alexis Aguayo, Jesus, what's his name? Really one of the best fighters ever who's never gets mentioned. Chris will look it up on his phone.
Yeah, Alexis Aguayo, because it's funny.
Aaron Pryor. Was it Aaron Pryor? Yeah. Fought Aaron Pryor.
Cincinnati, Ohio.
Yeah. One thing that's nice about being at these press junkets, it's the only time you go, who's the guy who fought Aguayo in 74? Aaron Pryor. Yeah, okay. You don't get that at the buffet or the roulette wheel. That's a 20-year-old bitch goes, hey, was that Aaron Pryor? Aaron Pryor, man. That guy.
Tough guy.
That guy was a fucking great fighter. And, I mean, his fight with Alexis Aguayo is epic.
They fought twice.
I know. But the first fight is epic.
Yeah.
And at a certain, he's beating the shit out of Alexis Aguayo. It's like the biggest unbeaten phenom, whatever. And at a certain point, Alexis Aguayo hits him with an uppercut that's like a Mike Tyson uppercut. It's just crazy, crazy. And Aaron Pryor's head, like a sock'em robot, literally goes up. He's like staring at the chandelier at the ballroom. Like literally goes up to 90 degrees. Like that's how hard he hit him. And he just kind of got back down and got settled and got back to him. But Panama Lewis was in the corner going, give me the water. And the guy's like, okay. And he's like, not that water, the water I mixed. And he's like, later on, he's just like, oh, it was just tap water. He's like, well, what do you mean the water you mixed? And it's like, no, not that water, my water, the special mixed water.
That was a great line. It was.
Yeah, the water I mixed. And this whole thing was like, it's just water.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, if you see Panama, tell Mace, you know.
He's down Florida. He's still around.
Just tell him, you know. But feel him out a little bit.
I will.
I want to know what kind of mood he's in.
Yeah.
He's got my digits if he wants to reach out to me.
So, Freddie, I would say most athletes, football, baseball, gotten bigger, gotten stronger. Would you say the best of the 80s, let's say middleweight, Sugar Ray, Durant, how would they compete against the best of the guys the last decade, let's say?
I like that era so much, maybe because I was part of it. Yeah. But the thing is, I think it was a much more crafted era.
A much more what?
Crafted fighters back then. And even like when people say, you know, could Manny Pacquiao beat Sugar Ray Leonard?
Yeah.
No.
You would? Now, do you tell him that?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. I'm an honest person. I don't have to lie about that.
I love the idea as an 8-time world champ and a guy who's king of the Philippines, and he's like, hey, ability, I give it a 5.
He's honest. You said it.
But that 5 became a 10, though, because we worked our ass off to get better.
Well,
we did.
I'm not kidding. Whether you're a fighter, whether you're a comedian, or whether you're in a rock band, you have a ledger. It is ability,
yes,
natural ability, comedic ability, physical ability, musicality, and then there's work ethic. Yeah. You want to be the greatest musician in the world, over here's junkie, well then it's going to be hard to have a lot of platinum records. Once in a while, you take that comedic ability and you meet the work ethic. I've always said that about like a guy like Jimmy Kimmel. Jimmy is funny. He's not the funniest guy you know. He's funny. His work ethic, his approach to comedy. You know, while Norm MacDonald is walking around with Kleenex boxes for slippers somewhere and pissing into a potted plant right now.
Howard Hughes style.
Howard Hughes style. He's a Howard Hughes comedy. It's said many times. Well, then what's it good for? You know what I mean? Like, what are we gonna do with it? There's fighters that way. There's comedians that way. There's rock stars that way. There's every facet of life has a version of that. And the true champions are the guys who take the ability and marry it to the work ethic.
Well, Freddie, you're so truthful. I can ask you this question. I'm so fascinated by the answer. Let's say Mayweather and Pacquiao
fought once a year for 7 years during their prime. What's the tally?
During their prime, 5-2, Pacquiao.
Wow, he's been honest.
See, that's what he does. He sets us up with the, he's a 5 in the Billy department, then he lies his fucking ass off, and we have to believe him.
I do believe him, though.
I'm saying he sets you up like Panama set me up back in the day. Just tell him I said hi. All right. Lewis. Thank you, Freddie Roach,
thank
for
you
coming by. Always fun. Appreciate. Best of luck Saturday night with your boy Manny. And such a great guy. Oh, real quick, is he going to be the king of the Philippines or the president of the Philippines or the grand poobah of the Philippines?
Be the first president world champion in the Philippines.
He's going to be the president. And
he's 49. He can run now.
Oh.
There is age limit.
Oh, they have laws?
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know they had laws.
You better watch yourself.
I didn't know they had laws. Okay, well, that's good. That's a step toward the light. No, don't tell them I said that. Don't tell them I said that. But tell Panama.
I will.
Tell them I said hi.
Of course.
Just tell them I said hi. Okay. The great Freddie Roach.
Yeah. Good luck, Freddie. Good luck.
Good luck. We love Freddie Roach.
Well, he is truthful, man.
He gave an 8-time world champion.
Yeah, that
a 5.
Was awesome. That was awesome.
All right, let me give you a 30 over here with Geico, everybody. Love me some Geico. Everyone's got the to-do list. How about you add save hundreds of dollars on your car insurance? You don't have to go anywhere. Go to geico.com. 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% more. Or more on your car insurance. Take that extra money, put it in your pocket. Most rewarding thing you'll do all day at Geico. That is geico.com. RJ, you got to do a Google image search of Joe Hip and then have a laugh. Max Apat will do it. He'll have a laugh. All right. So you were interviewing me about my greatest fight highlights.
Now, your talent is a work ethic,
I'm gonna add, all right, my talent as a boxer, you gotta find a full length of him looking fat with his knee brace on.
I think he's big boned.
I gotta say my ability. Well, now I sound like a douche because Manny Pacquiao's a 5. But my ability is a 7 or an 8. Well, Manny Pacquiao's not a 5. I don't know. Anyway, my ability is a 7 or 8. My work ethic is a 6, but my attitude's like a -4. Okay. So that's kind
so
of
so
the
more,
thing.
More ability than Pacquiao.
Well, obviously, if I'm at an 8.
Yeah, I'm just getting it straight.
No, it's weird. I can't, you can't, it doesn't make sense to do that. But I mean, what I'm saying is
you're not saying it. It's Freddie Roach, really, that you're more talented than Pacquiao.
What I'm saying is if Manny Pacquiao's ability is a 5, then like Oscar De La Hoya is like a 4.5 or something. Like it doesn't work out. You know what I mean? The math doesn't work.
But I love that he's not, because that's his guy. That's his meal ticket. And he's just saying the truth as he sees it.
I know. We're talking about him never having kids. Thank God he never had a daughter. Daddy, what do you think of my prom dress? 4. 4, 5. I don't know. Daddy, can I throw up into that trash can? I don't know. It's a pretty nice trash can. Can you find an uglier can? All right. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back and RJ. Oh, we'll do RJ's parlay and he can finish asking me one more fight story after this.
Jimmy Kimmel dared Adam Carolla to go on stage completely unprepared. And Adam had the balls to do it. So now you have the balls too. Bingo balls. Adam Carolla is unprepared is coming to your town. February 8th in Connecticut, February 9th in Boston, we got a bingo ball hopper. You write down one word on it, and Adam will spontaneously create a rant around it live on stage.
Steampunk. Oh, Jesus Christ. You guys know what steampunk is? This is basically rockabilly for people that make more than $37,000 a year.
Adam Carolla is unprepared. February 8th at Foxwoods Casino in Connecticut. February 9th at the Wilbur in Boston. Get your tickets now at adamcarolla.com.
What's up? Name's Xander Slade. I'm a professional parkour runner. Never heard of parkour. Number one, wake the fuck up. You're fast asleep. And number two, I'll tell you about it. Parkour is an ancient physical art form from Japan. It incorporates cool flips and shit into the process of getting from one point to another. It's a tough sport. I get a lot of bumps and bruises, but the most difficult aspect of running is staying loose. You can stretch all you want, but my secret is Mangria. I chug about a bottle and a half before I launch myself over 30-foot parking garage gaps and cling to cement walls with no handholds. For me, it's the best way to stay cool under pressure. Currently, I'm nursing two broken legs and a broken penis, so I'm out for a while. But know this, when I hit the streets again, Mangria's coming with me. Thanks, Mangria.
It's time. RJ's Parlay, presented by BetDSI, with Vegas insider RJ Bell.
Okay, well, listen, BetDSI.com special offer. If you like the picks that's coming up, you can use it, promo code BELL101, and you double your bankroll. Whatever you put in, they literally double it, BELL101, BetDSI.com.
So are you at 65%?
Yeah, a little bit over that. We had the 1-0 last week.
God, that is impressive, man.
I'm a little afraid because I know you have a lot of high school kids that listen to the show.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to think, you know, RJ makes it look so easy.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I should drop out of college, skip college, and become a professional batter. I just want to say it's not this easy.
No, it isn't. And also, I bet if you followed RJ around for a day, you wouldn't want to be RJ Bell. And that's not a criticism. That's not a criticism. I'm just saying, to all the young people listening, do a ride-along with RJ in the beige Camry, the cloth interior.
What we know
back
is...
back to the loveless relationship in the townhouse and Prim. And then see if you want to be RJ. That's all.
4 a.m. at Palace Station.
Crying in front of a buffet. Tapped out.
I would say this. You don't want to work for me. That is the tough gig. Oh, that is the tough gig.
You do not want to work under his tutelage. All right. So last week you were right about the Pats. The Patriots, I've always said never bet against the Patriots, and I never would bet against them, but they have a way of eking out a win. And the San Diego snake bit, and this time they literally just let the snake bite them in the second quarter and got it over with. Like, normally it comes down to the end. This time you were right, they just opened a can of whoop ass on them, the Patriots did.
And it was a bad situational spot for the Chargers. They had traveled 10,000 miles in the last couple of weeks, and Belichick hadn't left his house, you know, literally. So I actually, and it segues in, I like KC. So last week we only had one best bet. I'm going with both. I like both of these games, which is rare. There's only two. First one, Kansas City, laying the 3 in this game. And if you look at it, Patriots look better than their truth because of the situational negative that the Chargers had. And then I think the Patriots on the road are as bad as they've been this whole Brady Belichick era. And this is a road game. They've won 16 straight at them at home, the Pats. Below 500 this year at home.
Yeah.
On the road.
No, and I agree. And they've the thing about the Patriots this year is, even though they looked dominating last week, although it's tough to tell against San Diego because they're still the Chargers, and they've never really established a legacy, and they've never, even Rivers and everything, they've won a lot, but they, I don't know, did anyone really think they were the real deal, you know? To be the real deal, you got to put together a few seasons and a few championships. But anyway, they've also looked, the Patriots have looked real mortal a lot this year, more so than ever, you know,
and on the road mostly.
Right. So I
mean, think about it. The Lions dominated them.
Yes.
Right. And the Tennessee Titans dominated them.
That is a good, I like that pick. I was wrong last week. I felt like the Eagles sort of backed into the playoffs. I mean, I just felt like I remember half the, since they won the Super Bowl the year before, obviously, the first talk for the first half of the season is just what happened to the Eagles. Anytime a team wins the Super Bowl and is sort of stumbling around for the first 8 or 10 games, everyone's like, "What happened to the? What happened? They won the Super Bowl. What happened?" That's all I heard. And next thing you know, they're in the playoffs, and it's New Orleans at home. And I just thought they were going to roll on him because New Orleans was scoring 40 points a game.
At home, especially.
First part of the season. And next thing you know, the Eagles are up 14-0.
No doubt. And really, remember, the Rams were hosting the Eagles on Sunday Night Football, maybe 4 weeks before the season was over. The Rams were 13-point favorites in the game. And if the Eagles lost, the Eagles were done, eliminated. They won that game, won three more, won a playoff game. So amazing run. And maybe the Saints not covering that spread isn't so damning because the Eagles were playing with Foles really well.
Well, they're the only team that, since the Patriots, Drew Bledsoe days, that does better with their backup quarterback than they do with their phenom starter. And they're going to have to sort that out. I don't know. Foles is pretty much gone.
He's from Philly.
Where's he going?
They don't know, but he's a $20 million guy is what they're thinking. So this is a guy that signed as a backup. When he signed with Philly, it wasn't like compete for the job. It was, you know, Wentz was there. They had drafted him, number two. He accepted being a backup, and now he's a $20 million plus guy when he signs.
Well, I'll tell you what. When I sign up to be a backup, and I'm backing up a guy who has the hair of Johnny Whitaker, think Family Affair and Escape to Witch Mountain.
Family Affair with Sissy? Or Sissy?
Buffy,
yeah.
Sissy, Mrs. Beasley, Mr. French.
He was shady. What was going on with Mr. French?
Uncle Bill. I don't know. Why is a confirmed bachelor have a full-time butler? Like, French! So come wipe my ass! Like, why are you living full-time in a Manhattan penthouse with Mr. French, if you're a bachelor? What do you need a full-time staff for?
The dad always had the puffy face. Like, he
was great. Uncle Bill would, like, come in, and they'd go, Mrs. Beasley's missing. And he'd go, oh, God damn it. He'd put his hand in French! And there was always some issue about... I'm telling you, it's the most depressing sitcom of all time. Like... The premise of the sitcom, Family Affair, the premise of the sitcom is these kids are young twins and their parents are wiped out in a car accident. So already they're 5 years old. Those kids would be having fucking night terrors, like every night. Like you'd have to have a full-time counselor live at the house. Like, they'd wake up every single night screaming, covered with sweat and yelling, where's mommy? Where's mom? They never said shit about their parents, by the way. They were over it immediately. I feel Sonny and Italia would go down the same road. But they were fine. And this guy, Uncle Bill, was this confirmed bachelor who wanted, he didn't like kids, he didn't like people. And so every episode would be like, my first T-ball game's this weekend, Uncle Bill, are you going to be there? And he'd be like, I've got Japanese businessmen coming into town from Tokyo. And he's like, ah, shit. And he'd like put his hand on his face. French! French!
He was not a helicopter parent.
No, he'd just yell at Mr. French. And French was like an English butler. He's Sebastian Corbett was his name. He wore like a 9-piece suit with a pocket watch, and a guy would like brush his suede shoes when he went from one room to another room, and he had his hair, it's like, you know, like a goatee back when a goatee meant something, you know, and he'd like look at the kids and he'd like, you'd like an omelet, and it was crazy, and the kids were horrified.
How many hours of your life have you watched Family Affair?
I never seen the show. Why are you so obsessed with Family Affair? I got knocked down. I had no games. I had no parents. I had no life. All I had was a fucking 13-inch Zenith and Family Affair. But if you find Carson Wentz's hair and you look up Johnny Whitaker's hair from Family Affair, I think you're going to see many similarities. And all I'm saying is you want to back up a guy with red. You want to back up a ginger. That's all I'm saying.
I think the young daughter actually OD'd, though, the actress, if
Buffy.
I remember.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, there's actually a punk rock song by, like, the Dead Milkman or something like that, which is like about Buffy ODing at 16. That's punk rock, man. The chick from Family Affair doesn't see her 17th birthday and you write a song about it? All right. Oh, you got to see Sebastian Corbett. You got to see Mr. French. So now we got my Rams playing in New Orleans.
Yes, and I'm going. No, here's the thing. This line is floating between 3 and 3.5. And I know it's not fun to talk about each half point matters. If you like the Saints, and I do, lay 3. If you're laying 3.5, pass it. It's such a key number. But at 3, I like the Saints. And here's why.
They're favored by?
3 or 3.5. But I'm saying that's the key, is the 3. You want the 3. And to me, the Saints at home is the key. If you look at Goff, he is a below-average quarterback on the road, the Rams QB. And Drew Brees at home is amazing, outstanding. You mentioned it. They've scored over 30 points in every game Brees started at home except last week. So to me, that's more about the Eagles than it is about the Saints. Goff on the road, not so good. Laying only 3, we're going to go with the Saints.
Goff's hair reminds me of the middle son from Hello, Larry. No, don't want to look it up. But find the punk rock song, Max Zapata. Punk rock song about Buffy. Oh, by the way, I love this, by the way. Tracy Lords, you know, she named herself after Jack Lord from Hawaii Five-O. Mike, you're supposed to pretend like you don't know who any of these people are. Not nod your head feverishly. Oh, yeah. Believe you me. Oh, don't you worry.
I booked Tracy Lords.
One of my favorite porn stars from the 80s was named Buffy Davis.
Mm.
And Buffy Davis was the last name on Family.
Now, did that add to it?
Mr. Bill's last name was Bill Davis. Buffy Davis was a porn star from the 80s, and Buffy and Jody were the two kids. So not only did the chick who played Buffy from Family Affair and Buffy and Jody die or allegedly OD'd at a young age, but a punk rock band wrote a song about her and a porn star named herself after her character.
And you followed every move.
That's kind of a legacy, right?
And now Adam Carolla is talking about it.
And now Adam Carolla is talking about it. All right. So what are our picks one more time?
All right, we're going with Kansas City -3. That's an easy one. Not easy as in it's an easy winner, but the line is 3.
So they're 3-point favorites.
Saints, you can get 3 or 3.5. Our pick, though, Saints at 3.
Any particular Saints feelings about over-unders?
You know something? I think the weather is the key, and we're taping on Thursday, and the weather report in Kansas City, sometimes they've said down to 5, other times up to 20. If it goes in the single digits, scoring plummets. What's funny?
I'm just like, the granular
KC,
data.
Yeah. KC, they say it's kickoffs at 5. It's going to be 5 degrees.
That's what they thought 2 days ago. Then they said it's 20 now, so we'll see.
Shut up. What are they talking? Fucking weathermen. Why are we listening?
Going to wait this out.
What's the temperature? Call the meteorologist.
All right. Wait. So are the Saints favorite or dogs?
Favorites by 3. It's
favorites by 3 or 3.5.
Yes.
All right. Is there a punk rock song about Buffy?
I'm not finding one.
Yeah,
I'm
when we get off the air, you'll find it.
Yeah, I'm sure.
What are you typing in?
First I typed in Buffy, punk rock song, Death, Anissa Jones,
put Family Affair, Buffy, Family Affair,
yeah,
punk.
I did that too. Oh, okay.
Did the actress OD?
Yeah, Anissa Jones.
We can ask. We can hop over a table to Telemundo over there, get to the bottom of all this, so they can split, or you can keep messing around with that device of yours.
OD.
Oh, jeez.
What?
OD, later ruled as accidental, cocaine, PCP, Quaaludes.
At what age?
That sounds like a Friday 18. Night back when you were in your 20s.
Uh-huh. 18 years old.
18. So 18. She's doing all of that in like 1977 or something?
Hollywood chews you up.
She died in 76.
Oh, I was way off.
Yeah.
She died December 29th, 1970. No. So she dies at 18. All right. Now put in Buffy Davis porn star and see what pops up.
Last thought as we're doing this, no matter who wins this weekend.
Oh, what are you talking about? The family affair?
The Super Bowl will be around Pick'em.
Buffy Davis, 80s
really?
Porn
she exists.
Star.
No matter what teams?
Yeah,
she's
pretty
on,
much.
Right? Really?
They're all even because home team's favored by three, so it's assumed yeah. they're all even.
Kind of Pick'em.
All right, now we got to find that song. Punk rock, Buffy.
This is great. Pop.
Family Affair. All right, let me tell you about Bet DSI, right?
Yep.
All right, let's see. Another week of NFL here. Take the pigskin knowledge to the bank with BetDSI.com. Celebrating 20 years online with an impeccable reputation, great service, and fast payment as well. Get started with some extra bang for your buck. BetDSI is offering double on your first deposit. Deposits to start winning, and you get yourself $2,500 free. So deposit to start winning and get up to $2,500 free. Yes, double your money right away. Join BetDSI today using promo code BELL101. BELL101. And you've already won by doubling your bankroll straight away. That's promo code BELL101. Get in on the action and get paid.
So, Mike, I'm gonna
parlay. Presented by BetDSI.
Stepped on your own outro.
I'm gonna I'm gonna grab that drop and use it on my pod. Nice. And what's Adam gonna do? Nothing.
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 He won't even listen. He listens to his own pod. Why would he listen to yours?
What song? Did we find a song?
Nothing. Really coming up. The Death of Anissa Jones. Buffy Come Back by Angel in the Rerun.
Could you confuse us with another?
What year is that?
Family Affair, Tragic Death / song?
Well, if it's a punk rock band. Yeah.
Angel in the Reruns. I don't
Who's
know.
Squawk Jumper and Mrs. Beasley.
Buffy Come Back.
Yeah, first comment is I remember the song from K Rock, so.
What year was it?
This is
making me sad.
Left Turn and Sissy really and Mrs. Beasley.
I like it.
By the way, let me explain what my relationship
Bouncy
is
melody.
Like with Max Zapata.
I don't.
I go out front of the casino. There'd be an 8-foot black guy wearing a purple fedora with a feather out, hanging out of it in a black duster made of suede. And he'd go, okay. Then he'd come back and I'd go, anybody out there like that? And he'd go, no. Nobody. Just this 1 8-foot black guy wearing a fedora, purple, felt, suede duster. And I'd go, well, that's the guy I'm talking about. And he'd go, okay, well, then that guy's out
no
there.
Feather, no feather.
No feather.
I'm seeing that's Angel in the Reruns, Buffy Come Back, 2006, sound right?
No, okay. No, that's when that video was made. That song's old.
But the 80s, right?
But there's a punk rock song that you found.
That didn't sound quite punk rock.
Well,
thanks, Sergeant.
Singing about actresses that never saw their 19th birthday, first off, it's the essence of punk. No, I mean, punk rock, they had a lot of stupid ones. Like, they had a lot of Holiday in Cambodia and stuff like that. They weren't punk like crazy. They weren't like Green Day punk.
Spiritually
they were like
punk.
Weird punk. Yes, they're singing.
Glam punk.
Singing about a dead actress. Let me hear it again. Buffy, Buffy, Come Back to Me. Something with Mrs. Beasley. That was her doll. OD. Beasley. She OD'd. It's got to kick in. Well, the harp is because she's in heaven, right?
Yeah.
Is she? There you go.
Now it's kicking in. All right. So this poor actress.
Accidental overdose or suicide?
Accidental overdose.
You can never know, Mike.
Yeah, that's true.
We can but hope. Her legacy is squarely in place because she had a song written about her, played on K-Rock in the 80s. And then there's Buffy Davis,
it's the
renowned porn
star. It's the same arc as Bryan Cranston's career.
I'm saying you could do a lot worse.
Tony, Grammy.
That's all I'm saying.
Emmy.
All right. RJ Bell, man. See, when I came here and I knew I was going to be doing a show here, I was like, get me RJ Bell.
Well, I was like, remember on Night Court, the first episode, they said there was a list of 29 people, and then Harry was the 30th to be a judge. It's kind of like that.
I'm not a sitcom guy, so I don't know the reference, but I believe you.
Tyson's not available. You know, you went down the list, Liberace, you know, and then.
Get that punk rock song about the bailiff from Night Court killing himself. RJ Bell, website pregame.com. You can check him out there and the podcast, Dream Preview as well. Go to amcroll.com. Live shows coming up all over the place. Going to be Foxwoods Casino, Connecticut on the 8th of February, yes. Right?
Doing Adam Carolla will be unprepared.
Unprepared.
Also in Boston.
Hey, in Boston. One
last thing, Adam. It's
at
time
the
to...
At the Wilbur Theater on
Wilbur.
The 9th.
Wilbur.
Wilbur. Night next day, yes.
Time to fess up.
Yep.
So when I call in and I say the highlight of my week is when I make you laugh, you go, oh, no, you never make me laugh. You laughed a dozen times. Just admit it. Say, RJ Bell made me laugh. I'm Adam Carolla. And that's it. I'm happy.
RJ Bell made me laugh. I'm Adam Carolla.
All right.
And I love this man.
He's laughing at you, not with you. That's the distinction.
I'll take it.
And by the way, during the course of the podcast, the food was dragged away, but Mike found an omelet. Where did you get that omelet?
Crepes are us in the lobby. A mere $17.50.
He paid for it.
Jesus Christ.
Can you believe
Mike?
That? $17.50.
You broke
it. I don't want three.
You've broken every rule you've ever followed. Free food, giving way to $17 French food.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Now I can't eat for the rest of the day just based on principle.
Oh, per diem blown.
No
way. We're all done.
All right. So until next time, it's Adam Carolla for Freddie Roach and Steven Espinoza and RJ Bell and Chris Maxpata and Mike August saying mahalo.
Follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow Ace on Twitter at Adam Carolla. Come out and see the Ace Man in Adam Carolla is Unprepared. February 8th at Foxwoods in Connecticut and February 9th at the Wilbur in Boston. Tickets at AdamCarolla.com. Get some socks with Bald Brian's face on them. Get them while they last because they are going fast at DivvyUpSocks.com. Also, you're invited to the next 10E Booze and Book Club. Come and enjoy a signature Mangria cocktail. Listen to me read from Ghost, my 30 years as an FBI undercover agent, with special guest Michael R. McGowan at 10E on February 7th. This event is free, and all the information is at AdamCarolla.com.